it reflected my dry spell because it was mostly empty with a couple of bits stuck on there and a tea bag that my friend pinned up there. And that was it. That was my inspiration, a tea bag and two bits of old paintings. Hi, and welcome to episode 239 of Art Juice. This is honest, generous, and humorous conversations to feed your creative soul and to get you thinking with me, Louise Fletcher.
And me, Alice Sheridan.
Our topic this week is something I've brought to the table, which is nurturing ideas when they first arrive. But before we get into that, Alice, you've just been checking our reviews and you found some nice ones. Do you want to share about that?
Yeah, well, we were just saying that we have got to 4 million downloads of the podcast, which is amazing. And I think it's really funny when we look back. Do you remember that first, within about 6 weeks? So when we first started the podcast, we had about 400 listens a week, didn't we? Mm-hmm. And then one week, all of a sudden, we had a massive spike and it shot way up. And we thought, what's happened? There's suddenly thousands of listens. And we messaged Anchor and they went, oh no, it's a mistake. And because at the time we were tracking it, we were like, but it's going to skew our percentages and like it's going to really upset our average and our tracking. And oh, we'll never get to that account. Anyway, over time, things have grown gradually. We've never done a hockey stick kind of massive swoop up, but things stack up over time. And I know because I get messages from people who just discover us and listen all the way back. And I suppose there's a message, a couple of messages in this. The first thing is we never set out to do a podcast that had 4 million, and neither of it, we didn't even know, like, what would we rank it against? Like, what is a good podcast? To be honest, I still don't know that. 4 million feels pretty good to me. And it's also interesting that when we're not sort of paying attention to it, it's still clocking up in the background. So I just wanted to, and I'm sure we both do, just thank everybody who continues to listen and to share for others. And the thing that I love about it, the thing that I don't like about podcasts is, well, there's a kind of release from it, isn't there? The fact that it's just going out. When I think about the idea of broadcasting something, it makes me feel quite nervous. But I don't think about this because it started so small. And I think there's something in there for us to learn as artists as well about not necessarily focusing too much on an end goal and just going with the journey. Anyway, I just wanted to read this one, which came in from Joe. And she said, absolutely wonderful. And I'm not an artist. I'm not even sure how I came to find this podcast because I'm a psychotherapist, not an artist, unless we're talking about the art of therapy. But however it came into my life, I'm so utterly grateful. I feel inspired, uplifted, understood, connected, and entertained every time I listen. I missed you both loads over the festive break. And I listened back to some old episodes to bridge the gap. And when I saw the latest podcast available, I did a little squeak of delight. I felt like a real imposter at first, but the longer I've listened, the more I've come to realize that conversations about creativity and inspiration are probably relevant to just about anyone. You weave in so many different ideas. A lot of them relate to psychology, and I've recommended this podcast to clients and friends alike. Thank you both for putting it into this world. I feel a lot richer for having discovered it.
Joe, thank you.
Makes my heart sing too, little squeak of delight.
Yeah, I sometimes get that with just certain podcasts where I go, oh, there's a new one when I open my phone. So I know that feeling. And it's, I never imagined we would be that feeling for someone, but that is wonderful. Yeah. I still feel like we're just chatting to each other. And that's the beauty of doing podcasting. I think that's why you get so many honest podcasts, not just from us, but from lots of people, because it's just a chat maybe it's an interview, but it just feels like it's between two people. Or if you're on your own doing a podcast, you're just talking into a microphone by yourself. And the idea, that someone else is listening to it is something you don't think about while you're talking. Obviously, as evidenced by this amount of stupid things we've said over the 4 years.
That's the thing, right? That was one rule that we had at the beginning, was that we couldn't edit ourselves. I mean, we do edit it because sometimes, like, you know, we cough and the doorbell goes and all of that sort of stuff. But I just mean we had to just show up and talk about what was really relevant for us without thinking about who was going to be listening or what it was for sometimes. And occasionally we have some that are more directed. But anyway, just wanted to start with that.
And sometimes we get messages that say, I am so disappointed in you that you said X, Y, or Z. And it's like you get a little moment of thinking, oh, God, I'm sorry I've disappointed someone. But then you think, oh, sorry, but that is what I think. And, you know, sorry, that's not what you think, but it is what I think. So
interesting. Yeah, I haven't had those. Don't send me a message like that.
That's because you never read your emails.
It might be true. I read some occasionally.
So what have you been up to this week?
Well, it's been a while, hasn't it?
Actually, 2 weeks. Yeah,
been a while. So we were just talking before we started about not paying attention to things. And you said not paying attention to your health, and maybe sort of prompted a little bit by my mum's health, but not really. Prompted by a very good Sunday lunch last week, I decided that I would do a fast and see how long that went. So my mum has diabetes, which has just got to insulin stage, and she's not been great at looking after it, it has to be said. Anyway, so when I do the diabetes risk checker, my only risk is the fact that she has it. So I'm feeling like I've got to balance up the scales on the other side. So, and occasionally a long fast can do that. So I did it, but without really setting out to. So I did a 45-hour fast, which felt great. Louise is wincing. Yeah. I was surprised. I'd had a really good lunch on Sunday. And then Amy said, what's for supper? And I was like, supper? I don't want to eat. You know, we've already, what? No, I've had enough. And I thought, oh, okay, well, that's quite good. Maybe I'll just do tonight and see how far I get into tomorrow. And then I thought, well, if I get to tomorrow, and if I do tomorrow night too, that will be 40 hours. And that is supposed to be a real kind of gut reset. So I thought, well, I'll just see how I go. And if I get starving, hangry, I will eat. No biggie. Anyway, I got through the day quite happily, really quite. I had quite a busy day, but it was a computer-based day. I wouldn't do it when I was doing a lot of physical stuff. I probably wouldn't do it when I was having a studio physical moving around day. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was good. And I only stopped because it was our wedding anniversary and we were going out for dinner. And I thought, that's probably not the best meal to break a long fast with. So I better stop earlier in the day. So I would definitely do it again on an irregular basis. That length of time, probably only once every 6 months. And then this one's going to really scare you. Join the gym.
Oh, I did that once. Sorry, go on.
I joined the gym while I was in my feeling fabulous fast day. I did a series of commitments. So I made an appointment to go and look at the gym. So I knew I'd have to turn up because I'd made an appointment. And when I was there, I thought, well, you're either going to do this or you're not. So I signed up for a year, which got the thumbs up from the trainer, because they're just thinking, great, there's some sucker who signed up for a year and is not going to use it. Then I went for my induction session and didn't listen to my own body, listened to him, and overdid it on the calves exercises. Next day was a bit achy. Day after that, hobbling around my house, couldn't walk, never felt anything like it. Honestly, it was so bad. 2 days later, I'm back at the gym again. So I'm going, and I went yesterday, even though it was dark, it was the end of a very busy day. And I thought, I've put it in the diary, I've promised myself to go, even if I just go for 20 minutes and put good music in and just walk on the treadmill, that will be good. And once I was there, I was quite happy and I did more and I came back. And today I feel very gently pushed, which is good.
Yeah, that's good.
So, yeah,
Yeah, I think what put me off the gym, it wasn't laziness, actually. I was going regularly, but it is where I live. You know where I live. So it was 40 minutes there, or it was about 30 minutes. But then in traffic, it ended up being 30 minutes there. In traffic to Cone, or I could have done Skipton. But either way, it's by the time you've parked and got in there, and then you get back out. So it was taking up 2 hours out of every day.
Yeah, that's too long.
I just couldn't do it. Whereas if I was in a town and it was right there, it's not so bad. And that's my excuse anyway. So
but I tell you what you've got. You've got the space. You could have a bike or a running machine.
Running machine over the garage. I've just got it set up a few weeks ago and started doing quick bursts on it. And I put it on the incline, and I put it too much of an incline, I think. And on day two, I knackered my knee. So I'm just recovering from that. It's just stopped clicking and hurting.
Oh.
So I shall put the incline down, but I have got a treadmill. Anyway, this is all very exciting for everybody. What I did do for my own mental health is I cleared out my studio, and I mean properly cleared out. I got some friends to help me because I am not very good at clearing out. I tend to like look at everything, rearrange it a bit and think, so I got people to help me who insisted on holding up every pencil and saying, where does this go? And so that everything has its place now. It took all day on Sunday. And it will get messed up again. But I felt the need to like really clear out everything from the past and start again. So over the garage where the running machine is increasingly filled with half-finished and frames and whatever didn't. So yeah, I'm now building up this. I've got this amazing storage room with beautiful wood floorboards and lovely decoration. And it's used to be the guest room, and now it's just full of rubbish from my studio. But at least it's somewhere else.
At least it's out of the studio. Yeah, what prompted that? So was that a kind of...
Yeah, something new. And that's actually leads us perfectly into what I wanted us to talk about today. I have been having, after a long dry spell, quite a few ideas coming in, which actually, when I look back on it, are ideas I've been percolating for a few years, but in sketchbooks. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Or scraps of paper, and then I've left them and then I've come back to them. But it felt like time to really hatch something. But things were around that were from past things. Things were stuck on the walls and paintings were half finished that I never got anywhere with. And it felt like we've talked about clearing your house before, where it feels good to get the junk out and have a clean cupboard. Well, it felt like I needed a clean slate to start again and be really free to let these ideas develop. So that was what prompted the clear out. And so then I have an ideas board. I think you do a mood board, and it's a similar idea. I think I got a combination of your mood board and Nick Wilton's inspiration board, and I've always kept it up ever since. It's just somewhere where I stick things basically that I like. But you know, it reflected my dry spell because it was mostly empty with a couple of bits stuck on there and a tea bag that my friend pinned up there because he found it on the floor. And that was it. That was my inspiration, a tea bag and two bits of old paintings and a picture of Riley. So now it is filled with all the things I've been percolating. And that's the only thing in my studio that's full. The rest of it is waiting now for... I've made some first steps and I've done some experiments, but I wanted to talk about this because I have a tendency to do what somebody messaged me on Instagram. Jo Last messaged me and she had this phrase, pulling at the lead, which is when you are trying to go, right, okay, I've had an idea. Let's get on with it. Let's have a series of paintings by the end of a month. Let's do this. It's really exciting. And I think that's not the way to approach it. And what often happens with me is that I exhaust ideas like that by racing. So I thought it's something we could talk about in terms of when, how do we nurture our ideas, and when have we been successful at it, and what does that look like, and when can you go too far in the nurturing versus the doing, and but when can you go too fast? And I don't know what the answer is, so I was really hoping I'd turn up and you would give us like a 5-point solution.
I do not have a 5-point solution. I'm interested that you say that, though, because when you were first talking about the pulling at a lead thing, like, I've written down, like, that's not how I experience it usually.
Mm-hmm. So how do you experience when you are having ideas?
Well, this week I have been quite consciously trying not to fall back into the habit of what I usually do when I'm starting paintings. So I have almost been doing the opposite of feeling pulled on a lead, of like almost not digging my heels in isn't right, but putting the brakes on and just going, okay, just check the map. And sometimes I think it's great to just go, okay, I feel a thing, I'm going to do it, I want to try this. And I've had, for example, I've had times in the past where I've really wanted to try something different. Like, I did one group of work where I really wanted to pre-mix all my colours beforehand so that I wasn't slowed down in the process of painting by mixing colours. And I was deliberately choosing colours that were a bit brighter than I naturally mix when I mix them. And that was really interesting from a practical point of view of feeling like that feeling how easy it is to open a pot of pastels or a tin of pencils and just there's a very short time delay between the pull to instinctively choose a color and to put it on whatever you're working on. That is one of the biggest problems that I find with painting. And don't get me wrong, I enjoy color mixing, but sometimes the speed of it really annoys me. Like, if you've got paint and you haven't got enough of it, and then you want more, and then you can never get quite the, and again, those you want more, but you can never get exactly the same shade. Sometimes it's a great intellectual challenge to try and mix exactly the same thing again. And also, I love those little variations that come when you don't get it exactly the same again. And also, sometimes I'm just annoyed that my paintbrush isn't an endlessly refillable. You can kind of click the end of it and the color that you're imagining in your head pops out the brush. You've actually got to mix the damn stuff. So in that situation, having a deliberate idea, I'm going to try and see this, was felt like a pulling at the lead idea, and it did allow me to work a lot quicker.
Mm-hmm.
But now I'm feeling like my ideas need to be slower. Well, I need to be slower because the ideas that I feel like is going to be different, or the things that there's not even an idea. There is something that wants to come through in this next lot of work, and I have to be careful not to make it so noisy by just doing what I normally do. I feel like I've got to be slow enough in starting, quiet enough in starting, so that the little whisper of what's new, which is quiet at the beginning, it's not a well-established trait. It's not that kind of rut of wheels. Okay, this is what we do. Great, we'll just get going. That bit when you're feeling like, okay, I want something different, sometimes it comes at you with a, oh, that's different, I like that feel. But at the moment, I feel like it's quieter, it's slower. And that's what I've got to listen to for these new ideas to come through. That's how I'm feeling at the moment. It's like I say, it's not a, this is what you should do, but it feels different. It's interesting.
Yeah. And that's what I'm trying to do. It's kind of a making space, because
yeah.
What inspired this actually for me was I was busily working away in a sketchbook with doing a project on something that's always interested me, that I always love. And then our friend of the podcast, Rachel Davis, who's been on here before, posted something on Instagram where she does several different types of artwork, and someone had said to her, why not just put everything you like together and do it all in your paintings instead of doing separate things? And she said, like, you know, head exploded, like, wow, what could that look like? And at the same time, my head exploded because I was like, oh yeah, I keep this stuff for sketchbooks. What do I do when I have a chance to spend some time on my own and go off and do something? I go to, in my case, I go to vintage stores and I go through vintage papers. And what do I do in my sketchbooks? I work with vintage things. And what do I do in my paintings? Nothing to do with that. And
you have worked with papers in your paintings, though, before.
I've used papers as like the base. Yes, I have, as the basis for landscape paintings, and sometimes bits of them peep through. And I did one small series where I really combined abstract landscape and collage and vintage papers. But then I went back again. And it's not so much just using vintage papers. Like you said, I could do that again. You know, that I know how to do that. But it's more when I work in my sketchbooks with vintage papers, I bring them to the forefront, and vintage photographs and pictures of antiques and all of the things that really get me excited are at the forefront in sketchbooks, and then just get used as background in paintings. And then there's this, I've got all sorts of ideas that I absolutely love. Like, I find old photographs so poignant, particularly photographs of children, Victorian Edwardian children. So someone whose life has been and gone, and you're seeing them as a child full of all the hope and possibility. And then it's a bit gloomy, actually.
I was going to say, I don't think those Victorian pictures of children look like they're full of...
No, I don't mean the street children. I mean the very beautifully posed, you know, rich kids that have their pictures done in studios. That's the ones that really get to me. It's like they've got the perfect dress and the hair all done, and they're maybe 5 years old, and what happened to them and what tragedies did they experience? And so it's this feeling of, I get this feeling, I have like, right, I want to somehow bring all these things together, and I want to, so I start experimenting, and I've had a couple of really happy days just experimenting, going from one thing to another. But there is this constant thing in my head that I have to battle with, which is what the finished thing might look like. So I see how this might look, might be, you know, da, 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 da. And that, I think, is the death knell, because that is the opposite of what you just described, where you just described creating space for the whispers to come through. And there's a tendency often for me to rush past that phase to start making. And then either I finish some things, like them, put them up for sale, move on. Or more likely, the idea peters out because I didn't give it enough breathing space. So what I'm really trying to do is more now of what you're describing, to not let this be something I try and resolve this month, but to just let it be something that I have fun and experiment with for a while and see what happens.
Yeah, I think it's like most things that we do that involve some kind of change, because that is art, right? We're never just repeating ourselves. That for me is the difference between art and craft, in a way. Craft, you're repeating something, and art is always the kind of search for something new and different. But I think with anything that involves change, then I think there's the carrot and the stick, isn't there? And in art terms, is the what you're looking for, what you want, whether that is a feeling or an end result or something you feel wants to be different in the like finished visual result of your painting. Like, I want them to be even quieter, even calmer. And I want to still keep multiple soft, subtle differences between colour, but perhaps do that in a different way. So that's on the pull side. And then I also think then you have the what I want to stay away from, what you don't want. And I think it's just being aware of where those come up automatically, because then there's a reason why you've why you're doing things the way you do them, like in this moment in time. It's because that's all your experiences of so far, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
you use that. We're using that. And that's what your sketchbooks are for.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also a difference between what happens in your sketchbooks and what happens in the, I mean, when you're talking about things like papers, like there's a literal physical, there's a problem in the scale. It's just different.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Which is a big problem with using any of that kind of found stuff. So then it's, yeah. So what element is it of that that you want to, is it the actual images themselves or is it just the idea?
I think it's the idea. Now you're asking me, I'm thinking, what is it? What it is for me, when I go in a vintage shop and I look at vintage bits of paper, which is like one of my favorite things to do, is it's the sense of the life and the potential and the problems and the complications and the tragedies and the unknown, what can never be known about that person who wrote that letter or posed for that photograph. It's the poignancy of that. And it speaks to like a concern or constant issue that I've had throughout my life of terror of death, like just an absolute existential terror of death. Well, it is. Death is existential, so there you go. But that sense of like always that's been on my mind from being a kid. I used to just think I was dying all the time of something, like I had leukemia or I had some, you know, rare disease, and my mum would have to reassure me that I wasn't going to die. So is this something about, it's something, that's what I mean, it's I don't know yet. And if I just make it be about, oh, this picture looks cool set against this vintage paper.
Yeah.
And I make a nice painting, I won't get to all the possibilities of what that thing is that's pulling at me. But all I know is anytime I get a chance to go and spend a day, it will be going to a junk shop and poking around in old things and old, and people's old lives. And I go on eBay and I buy old photographs for no reason other than I want to look at, you know, unknown people and imagine their lives. And this, though, somehow also combines with the love of my landscape at home. It somehow combines with home. It somehow, it all combines. But then, you see, my brain will go, so you could put some trees and you could put some hill and a photograph and you could... You know, it starts
literal,
arranging,
isn't it?
Yeah, it starts arranging the pieces instead of, which I could do very nicely and that would look great, or I could let this all evolve into whatever it wants to evolve into. But I think at the basis of it, it's about honouring humanity of, it's about honouring the past or a person's life, which we may only have a tiny fragment left of. I think that's what's at the core of it. And giving that thing the importance it deserves, it's just shoved in a box in an antique shop underneath a bunch of other things.
Yeah.
But actually, it was someone's whole life. It was someone's, at the moment that they wrote that letter or had that picture taken or got married, it was their entire world, and now it's just nothing to everybody. So that's not very clear, but what I feel like is there's a way to bring in my love of drawing and my love of, you know, a lot in my own work. I draw and do figurative work, but that's just for me. I've done a lot of self-portraits. I've done a lot of work in sketchbooks on my own family history, myself and my brother as children, and a lot of that stuff. And I don't think it can all be done in one painting. That's another problem. So you've got to try and I think I've just got to let each of the seeds be whatever it's going to be and not judge. So, for example, if I want to, now I'm thinking aloud, but if I want to make that picture with the tree in the face and the, maybe I just do that. And also over here, I do this. And also over here, I do this. I think I'm prejudging and stopping. By prejudging, I'm stopping a lot of the possibilities. That's often what I do. It's a very production-oriented mindset that I'm constantly battling. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people constantly battle that when we, especially for people who live on the sales of their paintings, that can be really difficult because you want to nurture this idea over here, but you've got three shows coming up and a gallery mm-hmm. asking for work and customers waiting for commissions. And how do you do that? We're in a bit more of a luxury position at the moment where we're able to, although you do have some shows lined up, don't you? I was going to say we're apparently able to take time. I don't have anything on purpose. I was after my last show, I was approached by a really lovely little gallery in a market town in the Dales to do a landscape exhibition with them. And that was last year. And I thought, there's just no way I know if I'm going to want to paint landscapes next year. So I can't commit to some, I can't do it. I know people do that all the time, but just feel like a straitjacket. Yeah. And I'm glad now that I didn't do that. So I have all this open space. So it's just, I think it comes down to not judging right or wrong.
Yeah. And I wonder if this is where, if you like, some of my design background goes, like we've spoken about where ideas come from and unusual combinations. And I think when we're looking at it through the lens of what we can create, that tends to be the stuff that comes with us when we're looking at an idea. Whereas when you can take some of those ideas that you've just spoken about fragments or life being delicate or whatever it is, and isolate that a little bit away from the way that you've habitually made art until now, if you look at that as a new starting point, what does that give new shoots to?
Mm.
And I think when you approach those kind of, approach it that way with a little bit of separation from it, then you'll start to explore in different areas. And then there will be the threads that go back to what the way that you normally make. But I think you probably have to have that isolation. Well, I do anyway. You have to have that part where you're isolated. Like, what is it that I really want to do? And okay, if I were just to explore that idea, what would that look like? And sometimes we have to do that physically. And I do think sometimes we can do it mentally as well. I mean, you don't get the discovery and the unexpected in quite that way. But I think you can know. I mean, we can use our imagination to help us out here. By, you know, you could say, well, it could be, I could take those fragments or I could recreate something very small, or I could do drawings in the style of and present them in a Perspex box. Actually, you know, that idea leaves me completely cold. You don't actually have to do it to know what is and isn't for you.
Mm.
But I think by going through that process of, all right, well, what if, how about? And then suddenly there'll be something which you think, oh, okay, well, is it about the way things degrade? Do I really do something that really experiments with how, you know, paper degrades over time? You know, what does that look like in the landscape? What does it look like if I go and pin a sheet of paper to my washing line or stake it down in the garden and leave it for 3 weeks?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Mm.
But
yes,
I think
I totally get what you're saying. And that is the problem at the beginning. Sometimes I think, for me anyway, it's a very nefarious. So even yeah. when I was trying to explain it to you, I'm yeah. like, I can't find the words for it. And maybe that's where just doing lots of things, like I've been doing the last few days. At one point, I got really judgy on myself, like, oh, you're just moving between things, mm-hmm. you know, focus. But mm-hmm. no, actually, moving between things is probably good. It's probably good because in that somewhere will be the next thing.
And I think you'll find the thing you want to go deep on.
Yeah, exactly. By yeah. just doing lots. And,
yeah.
and I can see that too. One of the things I find helpful, I actually spent about 2 hours going back through all my old sketchbooks. And I'm not someone with hundreds because I didn't keep them until, you know, 2018 or something. So it's doable for me to look at everything I've got. And I took photos of certain pages, even if they weren't related to what I'm doing now, but ones that I really liked and could start from that to see threads as well. Mm-hmm. And there were a couple of spreads in the book I'm working on at the moment where I could just see, yes, that's it. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it is, but whatever it is, that's it. The problem is, I don't know what it is, so I don't know how to capture that again, but that is it. That, for me, did everything I wanted.
And I think that's all you can do. And I've done the same, as gone back and photocopied, so using the printer at home, photocopied pages of certain pages of a book, which I've now taped up on the studio wall. And I'm not analysing them and going, what is it? But they're there. They're in my peripheral vision.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a bit like looking at those Magic Eye posters, I think. You've got to just have stuff, and that's why the mood board thing works. It's just having stuff. It's like what you're feeding yourself with. And then I think you just have to trust that what's going to come out, it's just going to be the next part, isn't it? I don't think you can be too predictive, but I do think you have to be conscious of catching yourself. If you're looking for something new and different, you have to be conscious of catching yourself in the habits that stop you thinking or stop you doing that. And the habits are super useful. And also they can stop us experiencing something differently. So that's all I'm trying to do at the moment. And then just having, I tend to have just a big sheet of paper and a Sharpie, because if I do it with a pencil, it's too small and it gets lost in the muddle of my studio. So I'll have like a bigger sheet of paper and a Sharpie. And when I have like literally I'll just write it on there, you know, so it could be something like, you know, get more liquid ink staining ? You know, that's it.
Yeah.
That's all it needs to be. Like, I don't need to go, oh, okay, staining. What does that look like? All right, I need to sit down and figure that out. At the moment, that's all I need, is just to like capture that little idea. And then it's there. Then I can go back and go, oh, okay, that didn't grow into anything. Or more practically, what do I need to make available to myself in order for that to happen? Like, you know, I can't do it without the material. So go get the material. So one of the things I've written down this week is I've got lots of lovely thick cartridge paper. I want lots of thin, shitty paper.
Yeah.
I need to go and buy it, you know, because I keep not thinking and turning up in the studio and going, well, I haven't got the thing I needed. Oh, okay. And then going away and getting on with life and then going back and going, oh, I still don't have the thing I needed.
Yeah.
And like that has to happen about 3 times before I actually get my arse in gear and go and order something.
I went to film something for Art Tribe and it was going to be with watercolors. And then I went, I don't have any watercolor paper. Okay. But I got to order some now. And then it took about 3 days to get around to ordering it. It's arrived now. I have this quote I wanted to read out from Rick Rubin to kind of maybe wrap this up. It's from his book, The Creative Act. And I've shortened it as much as I can, but he talks about ideas as seeds. Mm-hmm. And he says that we collect seeds by observing out into the world. And he says, as the seeds arrive, forming conclusions about their value or their fate can get in the way of their natural potential. In this phase, the artist's work is to collect seeds, plant them, water them with attention, and see if they take root. Collect many seeds and then over time look back and see which ones resonate. Sometimes we're too close to them to recognize their true potential. And I love this. At other times, the magical moment that inspired a seed into existence is bigger than the seed itself. It's generally preferable to accumulate several weeks or months worth of ideas and then choose which of them to focus on, instead of following an urge to rush to the finish line with what is in front of us today. And the more seed you've gathered, the easier this is to judge.
And I think therein lies the problem with this. And interestingly, you missed out the line that is the bit that my eyes focused on, which is the seed that doesn't get watered cannot reveal its ability to bear fruit. And I often think when you have something, you have to nurture it. You have to take care of it. That's like that small voice. Like you've got to give that space. Otherwise, it's just not going to grow. But this is the problem. It takes time. And it's not a linear thing. It's not like everything I pay attention to is going to flourish into something that bears fruit. And there isn't enough time.
Yes, but there isn't enough time.
But there has to be. Like there has to be, because what time there is has to be enough. That's it. And it's when we get so wrapped up in all areas of everything, you know, doing A equals B, doing A equals B. It's frustrating when we find ourselves in that trap. And I think particularly with creativity and ideas, we have to accept that there's going to be things that don't happen and that we don't have the time to investigate. And this isn't all going to be done by the middle of March or whatever it is.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the hard thing.
Yeah, and it helps me to think of it as, instead of me thinking, oh, I'm trying to sort out this and I'm trying to make this idea work, it helps me to think about it as if it's coming from somewhere else, which might sound a bit grandiose, but it helps me to imagine that the idea is out there in the ether and it's floating around, and at the moment it's trying to come through me. And if I say no or don't do it, then it will go somewhere else. But if I listen, it can come through. And that helps me to not beat myself up if you should have sorted this out by now, to imagine it's something outside myself. In Liz Gilbert's book, she has Tom Waits, the musician, talked about driving his car. He was driving in traffic in LA and he got this really brilliant idea for a song. And he actually shouted out, "Can't you see I'm driving? I can't do this at the moment." And that idea that these things just pop in, but you can say, no, thanks, go somewhere else, and it could go to someone else. I like that thought. So, yeah, so I don't feel so ego-driven about getting it right, because it's not mine to get right anyway.
No. I mean, I think the only thing we can do is just be aware of how much, in the seed analogy, how much space and water we're giving to something. And, you know, before we started talking and you said, you know, not enough attention on, there's not all the different areas of life. Like, there's a lot going on for all of us. And sometimes that means that an area does feel squeezed. And again, I think there are times where I would have gone, oh, I haven't done what I should have done. Well, okay. And tomorrow, next week, what can you do differently about it? And not, it's just as it is.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, because we're recording this podcast earlier than normal because both of us have got things we have to go do which are not art related.
Yeah.
But we're needed.
Our things.
No, but we're needed. So it's nice to be needed.
Yeah.
Okay, that's it for us for this week. We hope this discussion's been helpful. I think this is a constant challenge for artists, so I'm sure that you've experienced it. And I bet for psychologists as well. So, Jo, I hope this resonated for you as well.
We're all just going in circles, basically. I mean, this is the...
Yeah.
This is...
Yeah. So we will see you next time, whenever that is. We're being a little bit more irregular with our podcast just because we're giving ourselves a little bit of that breathing room and space, but we are still here and we are still making them. So we'll see you next time. Find us on Instagram, just put in our names. Find us on Facebook, find me on YouTube, and we'll see you next time. Bye.